let's introduce you to our audience and have you give a quick sense of how long you've been at Dover and what you do there. And Captain Parrott, we'll start with you.
Yeah, sure. First of all, thanks for having us come in today. I showed up at Dover in late 2019 in August. I graduated pilot training in August or in 2019, earlier that year. So this was actually my first base as a pilot. Mm-hmm. I have a prior history in the military. This is 12 years for me. So I had two other jobs. One was a maintainer on F-15s. First duty station was in Okinawa, Japan. And then I had a job as a navigator on KC-135 aircraft in McConnell Air Force Base in Kansas. So I've been here for about 2 years. I scaled the entire Delaware state to find a nice nesting ground, and I ended up down in Lewis, about 30 minutes south. I love it down there. I love the Delaware community. I'm from Indiana originally. So for some reason, if you can stick cornfields next to a beach, I'm a happy guy. So.
Senior Admiral Copley, how about yourself?
I've been at Dover for almost 3 years now, mm-hmm. and I've been in the military for four in December. So, yeah.
And tell us a little bit about what you do at Dover.
At Dover, I've primarily been a loadmaster, loading cargo on C-17s. I'm an instructor loadmaster, so I've been teaching newer student loadmasters on how to properly perform their job. Also, while I've been here, I was at the Honor Guard for a while, and I did the base Honor Guard, paying respects to fallen service members. So,
well, let's talk a little bit about why we have you here, and that is your role in Operation Allies Refuge. We'll start with you, Captain Parrott. Just talk a little bit about the mission and what you were doing. Obviously, you're flying the planes.
Right. Yeah. So the mission is interesting. So when we got the call in the squadron, or me particularly, it was about 16 hours between the next phone call. So within 24 hours, we were called to take off. Now, when I went home to pack, you're not really sure. It's about 2 weeks you pack for. Where are you going to go? You're not sure. Just a typical thing. Sometimes you know ahead of time. Sometimes you don't. This is obviously a unique scenario. And within 24 hours, we had a very, very, very long day. Ended up in our next location realized it was like, oh, we are timing out. We have only a certain amount of time we can fly in the aircraft before we have to hand that aircraft off to the next crew or call it for the day. Given the constraints of the mission and how dire it was, we just handed the aircraft off to the next crew. And I think, interesting enough, the next crew, when we got off the plane, I shook hands with the other co-pilot. We ended up being buddies just earlier in the year, deployed. And he was like, looks like I'm taking over. And he takes over and find out he was the aircraft that had the 800 people on board.
Wow.
So it was a very, very, very cool, very unique experience, but also an eye-opening experience to see me handing off to somebody I know and then hearing his account at the end of it. So you knew right away this was a big deal, and the mission was very important. And then as it kind of unfolded and you saw people from around the community, all across the states, all in one location, working for the same goal. Everybody was fired up. Everybody was ready to do this, and the support was overwhelming. And so that was kind of the first way of realizing the gravity of the situation in this mission.
You mentioned hearing your friend's account of what he went through. Can you tell us a little bit about what he kind of relayed to you?
So I can tell you a little bit about it. I think at the time it kind of felt like more routine. Mm-hmm. He was just kind of delivering cargo there. I can't speak too much to
sure,
it, but
understood.
For as far as his account was that, okay, this is much bigger than just a normal mission, right? This is going to be fast. This is going to have to be accurate. We're going to have to get a flow, and we're going to have to execute the way we were trained. And he said, just be ready, and there's going to be a lot of challenges moving forward. And he's right. I mean, there was a lot of challenges for us, and we ended up knocking it out of the park, I think, as a crew. And we were trained to do so. So we do that a lot.
Senior Admiral Copley, how about from your perspective, what was the mission like for you?
The mission, so I got called after everyone else got sent out there. So I showed up a few days late. I was back home visiting with family. So they rushed me back to Dover. I got there, and then I got rushed out to where we're staying, where we would stay deployed. And I sat there, waited a few days, and then they finally called us to go into Kabul and start taking people out. So, yeah, at first it was like everyone was gung-ho, ready to go. And my crew specifically didn't get utilized a little bit later because there's other crews that they're using, and mm-hmm. we're just on standby waiting to get the call to go in. And finally we did. And we ended up going in to Kabul four times.
And so when you were in there, what was it like? You know, I guess what were you doing, and what was kind of like, you know, your impressions of what was happening as you were doing it?
When I got in Kabul, it was after like the initial challenges that everyone faced out there. So it was very orderly, very structured. Like, it felt like pretty standard, like mission wise. Like, they'd bring out the passengers, we'd upload them. Like, I just followed my training, and like, we trained for this. So it made it a little bit easier, like, just going through the whole situation and like uploading people.
Is it different uploading people rather than cargo, like, particularly in a situation like this?
In a situation like this, so I did both. So I had helicopters on one flight, and then I had close to 400 passengers on another. And we were tasked to load passengers on the flight where I had we had helicopters we were taking out. We weren't expecting that. So we showed up, and they're like, hey, you're going to have two helicopters and however many, like, Air Force personnel. And kind of took me off guard. Like, so I had to do my primary job that I had been doing the entire time, like, that I've been doing for the last 3 years. And, you know, it kind of, like, took me back, settled me, and I was like, okay, this is what I do all the time. So I would go load these helicopters, load these passengers, and get on out. So going back to loading passengers, it was just, like I said, we've got training for this. So it was pretty standard.
As you're both talking, it sounds like your training is what kind of kicks in here, and so you know that's what you're kind of focusing on. But do the circumstances, particularly in this case, ever kind of, you know, change your perception of what you're doing?
So
getting away you need to take that second maybe to be like, okay, like, this is a little bit different, but I need to stick with what I'm doing.
Absolutely. And I think, and I don't want to speak for, you know, everybody that did these missions,
sure.
But I think there is some element that, you know, once the gravity of a situation like this, you know, there's only a few times in history when the entire world stops and looks at what's going on in the news, right? And this was happening right here, right now in Afghanistan, and everybody we knew was doing it. And so we knew it was a big deal, and when you put that kind of pressure on, and sure, yeah, it is a little bit different. A unique piece about our training is in a lot of military training, and I've been through a lot of it. So anything from enlisted maintenance to navigator,
right,
to pilot, there's simple injects of confusion that are intentional. There are simple elements of doubt that they put in there. There are a lot of additional stresses and challenges that they put in the training because they know they can't prepare you for every situation to see everything. So you play these what-ifs. And so when we go and we plan these missions and we go and we fly these flights and these sorties, so to speak, so when we do that, we have to break them down into bites. And so it's either, how are we going to get off the ground, all right? How are we going to get these people on board or this cargo on board? Once we take off, is there terrain involved? Is there going to be something with the weight and CG that our loadmasters have to deal with? Is there going to be something unique that we could have a leak, or is there somebody that could be shot at? How are we going to go in to do this? So if you break it down into chunks, I think that helps to manage like the gravity, because now you're looking at such a smaller scope. But like you said, does this type of mission create an additional challenge? Absolutely. Because when the doors open and the first time you see 400 people at the back of your door with nothing that they've had this whole time, or nothing left from their homes, their kids, no diapers, some are pregnant, it's 100 degrees, you know, the weight of seeing that and what they're there for, to get out immediately, fear their life, or just need to get out, then that weight hits you. And so now you have to kind of take back and go, okay, it's not just taking this bite in this phase. Now I've got a new role. Now I've got I'm a sense of security. Let's keep it orderly. Let's keep the communication straight. Let's make this go as smoothly as possible. So I think everybody, the big play for this mission is CRM, which is what we call crew resource management. It's the communication against the crew to keep the temperature down when things get high, or to keep the flow and the movement of people and the movement of the mission very seamless and as smooth as possible. And so it's just keeping a cool head, and that was the challenge, I think, and the newer challenge because, yeah, we see it in training, but when it hits you, when the doors open, there's 400 people, they're ready to go, and the mission drives it, and it's important, then, yeah, that was the big challenge.
When you're talking about that, to kind of just keeping it orderly, as you're dealing with – do you wind up dealing a lot with the passengers themselves and kind of, you know, keeping them kind of, you know, orderly, keeping things moving and keeping things – you know, is as orderly and calm as possible, I guess is the
yeah,
what you're looking for.
I'm not going to speak. And Duncan, you could probably tell a lot more. He was in the back. A lot of us were up top, so I think he could tell more. But it was a collective of a lot of people on the ground, a lot of support.
Yeah, we had a lot of support agencies working towards like the common goal of getting the refugees to where they need to go. And in flight, like we face things that we normally wouldn't face, like C-17. We normally don't give out food on flights and stuff like that, but we always have water. But for like this magnitude of a mission, I had to preemptively make sure that we had water bottles and everything on the jet for the 400 or 500 passengers that we could be taking. So there was like some decision making and planning that we had to do before we even like took off with that to like make sure people were getting like their basic human rights and needs. But with like in flight, me personally, I didn't have like any. Anybody like getting really upset or anything because they weren't getting food or whatever. But we did have the challenges of like handing out food in a car compartment that you can barely like walk around because there's just so many people. And our flights were like roughly 4 hours. So people would like lay down and try to sleep. And so moving through the car compartment was like a little bit of not like an issue, but it was like a little harder to do than
different.
Normal.
And
right?
You're trying to be kind of respectful of
people's
space and such, right?
Yeah. So I would say like the biggest challenge we faced on the jet is just like making sure people got food who needed food and that like it was like evenly dispersed and nobody like felt like somebody was getting better treatment than somebody else.
Right. And I guess that's hard when you've got that many people and, you're trying to keep track of everything you're doing in sequence. You mentioned earlier about you had multiple flights and they had to be quick. Can you talk a little bit about, I guess, that challenge and making sure that the train keeps running?
Yeah. So I can only speak to like from a pilot's perspective. Mm-hmm. A lot of that was handled by a support agency on the ground where we were staged at. So and hats off to those guys. Like you're working hundreds of crews, lots of planes, and you're trying to keep as many in the air as possible, right? And then you have maintenance problems on top of it. So as far as that goes, we would come down from a flight and try to get another crew would try to tap us out, get us off the plane so we can go into crew rest, get the rest we needed. And then once that certain time period had elapsed, we were able to be alerted again for the next one. And they just kind of hopscotch like that. As far as the aircraft go, I think maintenance personnel would probably have to speak better to that. But I do know that those were challenges. Hot weather, you're running them all the time. The air conditioning systems were like at the time struggling to maintain this weather and these conditions. So that flow in the beginning, it was challenging and getting the crews to move around. But they did a phenomenal job towards the end, like ironing that out so that they kept a plane moving every time.
And it sounds to me, I mean, the thing I'm kind of taking away from what you're telling me is that, when you talk about something like this, that's such a massive effort, like historically massive.
Right.
I mean, this really requires the team all doing their parts. I mean, you talk about kind of compartmentalizing and taking things in chunks, but it's also each team doing its chunk, right?
Absolutely. Yep. And hats off, even back here at Dover, which was insane. So, like, we had guys and people from the 9th, and the 9th is the C-5 unit at Dover, and the 3rd. Spouses reaching out to the Dover community. They had over $20,000 worth of cargo that they gave. It was hygiene products, baby care, supplies, whatever. And then, obviously financial donations that they were able to do that. So not just the team, like,
on
the stage, but you're talking about the community back here, which is – thank you very much, by the way. This shout out to Dover for that. That was huge. That made a huge difference for the well-being and what we could do on the plane because we could hand that stuff out. So we were the vessel for your effort. We really appreciate that. But as far as the teams out there, yeah, you're talking the medical. You're talking the transportation. You're talking maintenance, the command and control center. How do we get people in and out of this plane? How do we get people back into crew rest? How do we get them from their dorms to here?
Mm-hmm.
Constantly running trains of transportation. This operation, I don't know how to understate this. This is massive. And what they did was absolutely impressive.
From your standpoint, I mean, obviously it's like you're focusing on what you're doing, but you have to be able to rely on the rest of the team doing their part so that you can stay focused on what you're doing, right?
Yeah. So this was definitely like a huge crew effort, like just within the aircraft and then outside the aircraft, all our support agencies. Everyone was doing phenomenal so that these missions could be run and so that we could get people to the States and wherever else that they may be now. But it was definitely like a huge group effort to get this entire operation like successful. So, yeah.
I know, people, on the outside looking in have seen the photos and the videos of what was happening during this evacuation effort. For you each, and we'll start with you, is there something that kind of stuck with you, that sticks with you from what you saw, what you heard, what you were doing during that mission?
Yeah, so for me, normally when we're moving missions, you don't get to see the outcome of your mission. Like, you'll move some Suburbans from one place to another, and it's like, okay, you did that. But, like, you don't see the long-lasting effects that you've had on, like, the mission. And with this, you, like, the news is covering a lot, so you can see a lot that you have directly impacted. Like, personally, I moved 940 refugees out of Kabul, and, like, seeing that they're back here and they're living a healthy life and, like, things are looking good, like, that's really awesome to see. And one of the missions while I was out there, it was the first one. Yeah, it was actually the first mission we were out there. We moved 250 refugees and some aeromedical patients back to Qatar. And one of the personnel that we moved was a translator. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hey, we need to get this guy, like, helping us translate so that we could talk. And two missions later, he walked up to the jet. He's like, hey, what's up? Like, a friendly face. And it was cool to see that I had that impact on the entire mission, that, hey, I brought this guy back, and now he's helping us.
Pointed out, like, hey, this guy could be useful, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, like, it was just really cool to see that. So,
that's awesome.
Yeah, throughout the whole experience, I was really
happy.
How
about for you, Captain?
I think that one of the big things for me was, like, it's kind of more of an introspective look, but how the impact of something this big comes in waves. Mm-hmm. So initially, like I said, you compartmentalize your job to get very challenging aspects done and keep your mind focused in different bites, but I think when we landed the first time, the cargo door opened and seeing 400 people, that's all they have, right? And it's time to go. That was the first, like, okay. And then you start feeling this emotional security, like, this is my plane. These are my people. Nobody's touching this. We're going to get you guys out. And I think there was a sentiment that felt across the force. But I think the second wave was once you started seeing how many people were involved and how actively engaged and how bad they wanted to go in and get people out. So this huge sense of community now. And then when you got back, it was like, then you started taking in just how much we did, because you only see little bits at a time, right? I don't see all the numbers. They don't tell you, hey, we're at this number, right? And then when you get back, you go like, oh my God, I was a part of that. And then not only that, the shout out to Dover's, like, support community as far as the maintenance, or as far as the healthcare, as far as everybody, every support agency, when we landed, they were there to help. Hey, do you need to talk about anything? Hey, do you need some time? Do you need us to help you with some paperwork? Whatever. It was impressive. Everybody wanted a hand in it. So, and then I think one other memorable moment was, like, being able to take a blanket out of my bag and give it to somebody. And you saw this happen, and you heard of this happening across a lot of planes. It was like, how can I give something of mine to you to make your stay or your travel easier? This is not easy on anybody. So any way we could do it was kind of a comfort role we played, which is very cool.